So we're here with Cam, and Cam is a senior architect for NBC. And Cam, why don't you tell us a little about what you do?
We have a series of websites for our various shows at NBC.com that we present content, images, text, and most importantly, video on the website. And I was responsible for architecting the publishing engine that publishes that same content out for mobile devices, iPhones, Androids, BlackBerries, and so on.
I know the platform has changed in the last 5 years dramatically, and I know you've been doing this for a long time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what changed in the last 5 or 6 years, and how did your job as architecting solutions to platforms that keep developing have changed?
It's changed quite a bit. For the entertainment sector, which is where I've been working predominantly, it's always been about content delivery. And up until the 3G devices, and more importantly, devices with capable browsers, that content delivery wasn't very practical. For content publishers such as NBC directly, they had to either partner with people who had infrastructure and applications built, again, on a very few platforms, writing custom applications in Java, which was the predominant platform for mobile devices up until recently. With the iPhone, Android, to some extent BlackBerry and Windows Mobile also, that changed completely. We now have browsers that can not only do presentation of fairly simple websites with tables and style sheets to more advanced features such as Ajax, and are also capable of delivering streaming content with robust media players built in.
Yeah, I know. When I'm browsing a website right now with my phone, it's basically like browsing with your own computer, compared to the old phone that I used to have that basically only saw WAP, and everything was just, not
Exactly.
unrendered.
Yeah.
Today, it's basically the exact same thing as browsing with your own computer.
Exactly. And what's made even a more radical difference is that you now have devices that are finger-based as opposed to stylus-based. Back in the day, when you had predominantly Windows Mobile and Palm OS devices that were stylus-based, or you had your typical flip phone, which just had a cursor pad to navigate around. Our market research showed that of the people that owned internet-capable phone, very, very few were actually on the internet with their phones simply because it wasn't convenient. And now with multi-touch, the ability to quickly swipe with your finger to scroll through a web page, to quickly zoom in and out of particular sections of web pages, and the screens have gotten big enough that it's actually practical for at least short periods to even consume text content, we've seen an explosion in traffic through the mobile sites.
I know that pinching brought everything up a notch, because you can basically zoom in and out without even trying to. It's very instinctive.
Yeah, it's very intuitive. It's very trivial for people to learn these gestures, and multi-touch has really changed the game. And where I think we're now at the tip of the iceberg for consuming content through our mobile devices. I think the role of the traditional computer, traditional laptop, is going to be changed forever for how most people casually consume content. It's going to be through mobile devices and tablet devices in the future.
And the border between custom applications and website pretty much deteriorated. I mean, you can launch an application that's actually a website. It's written in HTML or it's written in JavaScript, but it's an application that runs locally on your own device.
Yeah, the Palm Pre really took that to the next level by building their entire operating system around the web paradigm of what a browser app can and could be.
It's the same with Android.
Very true also with Android, and also true with with the iPhone. As these browsers get more and more HTML5 compliant, you know, they've got access to a local SQL store inside the browser itself. They've got caching so that when you tab or navigate from one part of the quote-unquote app to the other, it feels like a seamless client-based app instead of a server-based browser app.
So how do you go around architecting a solution that you know lives partially on the user's phone and partially on NBC servers? I mean, you would have to go and look at the UI and design the UI as if it's running off of your own NBC server, but then the processing power actually comes in from the client, and if there's any data needed, you have to decide where you're going to store it.
We're just at the cusp of architecting that way now. You have to remember that this is a recent phenomenon, and what we're experiencing on the mobile front is something that as developers we've been tackling with a few years ago when we had the browser wars, and we had to make sure that we could have a site or app that rendered properly on Firefox, and before that Netscape, as well as Internet Explorer. They had slightly different ways of rendering tables, and getting the formatting just so was quite a battle. And unfortunately, with mobile front, we've taken two steps forward and one step back. We're back to the browser wars. We have browsers that are quickly becoming a level playing field, but we have to take into account that our users could be coming from an Android app, an Android browser-based device, iPhone-based device.
I know that Android kind of gave us a break being the same base browser as iPhone, basically. So a lot of the features...
Yeah, based on WebKit, it helps a lot because if you look at the BlackBerry, they're still quite a bit behind on their browser capabilities, and just the entire browsing experience is now a generation behind what people have come to expect from the Palm Pre, from the iPhone, and certainly Android. So the bulk of the traffic now coming from the more capable devices, it lets us build more capable sites, but they're still not in the same level of HTML5 draft compliance. As they move closer and closer, our presentation code will move to more and more of a common base, but we still have to code for those exceptions at this point. And right now it's down to presentation, which cripples us in the final user experience, because our benchmark is the iPhone, and we want to be able to give the same user experience and the same level of slickness to the front end as to every other device, but we have to test for it, and it's still not all the features are supported across the board, so we have to write that conditional code. And that brings me to a point of a very important point for those of you that are looking to do mobile applications. And this was the big challenge faced by us, is how do you detect and determine what browser you're dealing with? Every browser on the mobile device will return something known as a user agent string. And the user agent string is what your traditional browsers give you too, and is a very common way of detecting what kind of browser you're on. And we use a database mapping system called deviceatlas.com. And it's a free developer's license. If you want more support, there's a cost associated with it, but it's a great point to look at to see how they've implemented it. They give you PHP and .NET classes for basically taking the user agent string, comparing it to their continually updated database of devices, and it not only tells you the device that you're looking at, but it tells you the device capabilities as far as video playback, screen resolution, screen size.
But then again, how much granular can you get? I mean, would you really want to develop for something that's not Android, that's not an iPhone, that's not a Palm
Pre? That's an excellent point.
Would you put the resources up? Would you put the developers up?
That is a choice that each site needs to make, depending on how wide an audience they want to reach and how fine-tuned you want to make the experience. A happy medium that I found is that you establish a handful of device classes, say five, and you group the devices into one of those five classes, and you make the presentation accordingly. So if one of your device classes, say, is iPhone, you code for that, and then you have a certain device class known as, say, your dumb phones, or not smartphones, your flip phones, the very common Nokias, Samsungs, LGs, and so on. And that way you aren't coding for every device out there, but a number of devices, and you can cover the vast majority of them and give them an experience suited to their device.
Now, how far ahead do you guys plan when you write an app? I mean, we all heard, we all know that Windows 7 Mobile is on its way. Have you guys started to experiment with it yet? Are there any prototypes? What do you see as the major differences between what's coming from Microsoft and basically the rest of the market? I mean, we know that the free operating systems, the Symbian and Android, they both use the same browser. Are you guys planning on any mobile IE8 version?
We get our information, like a lot of people, through what we read on the internet and news blogs and so on.
You would expect that Microsoft would work directly with somebody as big as NBC?
You would expect that. It's not always the case. We have other divisions within NBC that are different, doing mobile initiatives, and certainly some have more closer relationship with the hardware groups than others. In my particular project, we don't have the luxury of a direct relationship with these manufacturers, which is fine, because we're building things that are browser-based, and we can tell from the W3C what the HTML5 draft specification is going to be. We do have a handle on what features are coming because they're all moving towards that spec. So with that in mind, we plan features accordingly of what we intend to deliver. And as soon as we see an update from a manufacturer, we get a test device through our normal channels. And just like every other developer out there, we experiment and we prototype.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
So let's take a step back and talk a little bit about what used to be the latest technology about 5 years ago and now almost disappeared, J2ME.
Yeah, J2ME was in the right place at the right time, which is why it was successful then. It ran on a great deal of devices. But as devices evolved, I guess J2ME didn't evolve with it. To take advantage of all those devices that could do, which is why both Android and Apple decided not to use it for their platforms.
I think Android has their own version of what seems to be like Java, but not really Java. It's basically compiling your Java classes into their own virtual machine.
Right. And that's a good approach for them. You know, the difference now is that with J2ME, all the players could look to a large common form factor, if you will, a framework for within to develop their applications. And that would give them momentum and representation to be able to know that their apps would have a home. Well, iPhone and Android companies have gotten so big on their own that I think they've got the perspective that they don't need J2ME.
Well, I looked at the videos like everybody, and I looked at what developers said, and the biggest question on everybody's mind is, can you run J2ME on Android? For some reason, because it's Linux-based, everybody wants to run Java on it.
And that's a natural expectation.
And Google basically declared that it is possible, but not recommended, and they're not going to support it.
Right.
So basically, they said that they chose their own version of Java simply because they want to attract developers, exactly like Microsoft did with .NET.
Exactly, and how the iPhone has with Objective-C. Of all the platforms, I will say that I think the one that will quickly gain momentum as the primary platform for developers will be the Android app platform, simply because I think there's a bigger barrier to entry with the Apple system, it being a little bit more closed. And Android also has a big, big jump start on Windows 7, a big lead in the market, waiting for Windows 7 to come out, which has been delayed from its original release date. And also, the mood of the Android platform seems to be all about tinkering, all about experimentation, especially for an independent developer who can get a device and basically hack it any way they see fit.
That's the way it is with open source, and they have a really good plugin for Eclipse.
Yeah,
and you can basically start coding for Android at an investment of $0, which you can't really do with iPhones.
Yeah, the iPhone system is definitely more closed, but at the same time, it's more formal. And you know, putting up a walled garden has its advantages and disadvantages. And you know, Apple is all about the user experience, protecting that user experience, and making their devices as more as much appliance-like as possible. And that for them means, the way I see it, in my opinion, reducing as many risks as possible. So they've taken, I think, a appropriate approach for their philosophy, their corporate philosophy. And I think Google
is taking... You know what they say, Apple is the new Microsoft.
That's right, Apple, they say that, but Apple's the new Microsoft. And Microsoft is the new old IBM.
Well, that .NET is open source. Not a lot of people are aware of that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the price model. Basically, everything needs to be justified in dollars and cents. What about charging for mobile apps? Charging for mobile websites? That new price model of app stores versus mobile sites that are giving away a subscription. There's obviously less room on a mobile device to put an ad, which would make it more difficult to give away free content on a mobile.
Yeah, the model seems to be on mobile devices is that you charge a lot less than you would traditionally for applications, but that you make up for it in volume, where you sell, you know, the successful apps for the iPhone have sold, you know, in the first few months, sold hundreds of thousands of copies.
People were more excited. It was fresh. It was new.
It was new, and there's a big market. There's a big pent-up market for people with devices who wanted apps to run.
And you're basically closer to your app 24/7. I mean, you're not always in front of a computer, but you're always in front of
your phone.
It's
something that's with you wherever you go. It's by your bedside when you go. I use my iPhone as an alarm clock to stream radio. I'm sure people do that and far more with their Androids and Blackberries and so on. Yeah, it's become something that's with you more than your house keys are, which you put away when you walk through the door, but your mobile device stays with you. And you know, that's why I think it's going to change the way people consume information.
So what would you say to people that have a website and want the best way of mobilizing their website? They want low cost, they want fast development, they want to basically have their website available for phone users.
There's some tenets you have to follow. The first thing you have to remember is that you're dealing with a much smaller screen and you're not dealing with a mouse. So you have to throw your standard web design practices out the window somewhat. You have to keep in mind that you want to simplify the navigation. You want to make the content readable on a large screen, even if it means that people are going to have to do quite a bit of scrolling or paging, which is not as difficult as it used to be because we have finger styluses now and we have gestures for swiping through content. So people can browse a tremendous amount of content a lot faster than they could with the older devices. You also have to make your buttons and icons on your sites and applications very fat finger friendly. That means that don't expect the dexterity of a Barbie doll.
Sometimes greasy fingers friendly.
Yeah, greasy fingers friendly as well. You just want to make the site easy to use in a casual fashion. And that means visual redesign and how you lay out your content and present your content is very important. And it's the only way to learn to do this is by looking at sites that have done it well. And you'll know instantly when you go to those sites and you're able to browse a lot of content easily, and you keep coming back to that site for mobile content. So just keep those points in mind.
What about Flash and Silverlight? I know that a lot of phones support.
Yeah, Flash support is coming to these mobile devices.
I know that I have Flash support on my Android phone.
That's right.
And it's excellent.
It's a very good thing to have. However, we are on the cusp, I think, of a paradigm shift in how sites are built. YouTube is experimenting and probably moving away from Flash. I've heard the same is true for Vimeo, and some other large brand sites are also considering moving away from Flash. And that's because HTML5 is getting more and more capable. For content delivery to the most number of devices, my recommendation has to be that you consider building your sites without Flash at first.
You know, sometimes you just gotta stream some media, and Flash seems to be the easiest way to stream out movies.
Not if you want to stream to the most number of devices. And that brings us to another challenge if you're contemplating video. If you thought supporting different browser flavors was a challenge, wait till you get to video formats. Delivering content to iPhone is predominantly H.264, as are some of the more capable devices out there. But if you're still looking to support some of the older devices, you need to still consider 3GP. So that means taking your content and transcoding it into one of many formats to get it to play well, to be an enjoyable video experience for those devices. If you transcode at too high a bit rate, the video will look good over Wi-Fi until your user out in the field suddenly drops to 2G, and then they'll be cursing your site because the quality will just appear to be horrible, or they'll get a tremendous amount of lag time as their device buffers the video, and so on. So it's a balancing game if you're delivering video content. And I don't know if Flash will ultimately be the winner of the content delivery wars for video on mobile. And I say that simply because Apple is very successful in this field. They have a lot of installed devices, and they dictate a good segment of the market. And, you know, when these days when Apple sneezes, everybody else catches a cold. they have a great position in the industry right now. So I guess it's up to Steve Jobs ultimately whether iPhones will ever support Flash. It doesn't look likely at this point that they ever will, in my opinion. So for overall development, I think everyone should think about building HTML5. And if you do, you will probably be browser-proof.
You just say that because you're a Mac user.
No, I mean, I use PCs all day long, too. I am very platform and operating system agnostic.
Me too, as long as I'm working on Microsoft platform.
There you go. To me, a hammer is a hammer. I don't care what brand it is. As long as it drives a nail into the wood, that's all I care about. So the way the market is looking to me right now, I think if you're planning to introduce mobile sites in the near future, I think HTML, CSS, JavaScript is the way to go.
What do you think is in store for us in the next 5 years? It's been really exciting 5 years, and the technology just jumped beyond, none of us, I think, imagined the handheld devices that are going
to
be
coming out. They got off to a really slow start. For the long time, it looked like there was going to be no progress made. We went from Palm OS devices that were not phones, that were pure PDAs, to them finally integrating into a phone, and the marriage was successful, if somewhat cumbersome. The devices worked well, but they stayed the same for a long time on the Palm front and the Windows front. There was no radical paradigm shift, and Apple changed all that. Palm did also when they came out with the Pre by introducing some novel features as well. Android has made a big splash by, I think, democratizing mobile devices. I think there'll be more Android devices installed in the very near future than anything else. You know, even Nokia had to respond and made Symbian open source. Too little too late, I think, for them, even though they still have a huge market share in most of the world.
I don't think anybody's going to be developing applications for Symbian at the same rate that they will. I mean, no. people go and develop applications where they think they can sell.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because what's new is what's exciting, and more people will develop for their new platforms, and therefore most users will see that and adopt the newer platforms faster. It's kind of
it's just like the commercials with Apple. We have, you know, a million apps, and then Android, it's going to be the same thing. Yeah, especially when it's so easy to write apps for
exactly.
Android.
The barrier to entry to building an Android app is very easy. So if you, like I said, if you want to build, you know, apps that are multi-platform, that reaches the biggest audience, you definitely want to consider browser-based apps. You want to consider, in my opinion, HTML5 as the upcoming platform choice. Certainly JavaScript and CSS for rich presentation, good user experience. And in the future, that's an excellent question. I think the browsers are going to start taking over more and more desktop apps. We've already seen that with Google Apps, with their docs and so on. And I think that's a trend that's going to continue. And I think it's a positive trend, because it'll bring more devices to more people. And I think Apple has it right when they're trying to pursue the idiom of having an appliance-like device for every person. Something like, well, let's face it, an iPad is a device you could buy for your mother, you know, for people who are not at all technical, who don't have to worry about viruses and so on. And I think that's where the market's headed, is easy to use devices, maybe not as capable. I know that for developers like you and me, you know, we may develop for iPads, but we won't buy them to use necessarily for ourselves.
You got that one right.
Yeah,
which is fine. No iPad for me, thank you.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, we are not the target market. You know?
But we are the market for software as a service. And how would software as a service function on an iPad?
That's a good question. What is going to happen is that if it's, again, browser-based, then they'll follow the paradigm that they have followed. If it's an app, then it's going to go back to that standard client-service architecture, where these services are the application, and they're hosted somewhere.
Somewhere on the cloud.
Somewhere on the cloud, and very distributed. And the client can be used as a point of entry to generate revenue, to create a secure entry point into your application. But again, as the browsers get more capable, that can go away.
What about computing power? I heard someone from Google saying that computer power is not really the issue for phones. It's basically how fast you can get your RAM, because the RAM right now is the main concern. In mobile devices, it's simply not as capable as the CPU.
That is true. It's also a race to build things that are more power efficient rather than powerful, because if you look at
the because
of the battery life. If you look at the current Google Nexus One, it's a blazingly fast device. It's a very, very fast device. The iPhone 3GS is a very fast device. If you look at games that are natively built in these devices using their native APIs, you know, they're not short on power with 3D rendering capabilities and so on. You know, people have compared the iPhone 3GS to a PlayStation Portable in terms of graphics power.
But you don't have to charge a PlayStation 4 every 8 hours. My new phone, you have to charge it every 8 hours or it just simply dies.
Yeah, but it also fits in your pocket. It can make phone calls. It's on all the time.
You know what? You think you can make phone calls, but the other day I took my phone and I swear I tried to make a phone call and it said Android.phone crashed. So my phone is a very good web browser, but it's simply not as good of a phone as the old phone I used to have is.
Yeah. Networks, that's the next issue, I guess, is, you know, how are these networks going to keep up with the data demands? You know, AT&T is claiming that their traffic is now in the petabytes because of devices like the iPhone. Because, again, you have them with you. And having it with you gives you the opportunity to consume content at absolutely every moment, day or night.
What about providing content? I always claim that in the near future we're going to be able to host our own website on our phone.
That's already happened. There are devices out there with web servers built in where people have using their devices as data stores and you know, they bring the device home and they access the web browser running on the device to pull content on and off the device.
So in one hand, we have development going out, spreading out to cloud services, to cloud computing that's not hosted on a single server. And on the other hand, we have computing power going back into mobile devices. So we're kind of pulling ourselves into two different trends here.
Right. You know, I think grid computing is, distributed computing is something that's really...
You're still calling it grid computing.
I'm old school. I'm old guy.
It's cloud computing now.
Yeah, where your device is going to be part of the cloud as well, you know. And, you know, it'll become sentient and kill us all, like in the Terminator. So be careful what you wish for out there.
All right, and in that tone, we're going to conclude our conversation here. Thank you, Cam, for being a part of podcast number one.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you all.